The next case for argument is 17-2538 Kerr v. MSPB. Ms. Ayers?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning. We're ready whenever you are.
Okay. May I please report? My name is Stephanie Ayers. I'm counsel for Appellant Kerr. The MSPB suggests that this court tell a litigant who has spent the last 10 years in U.S. federal courts trying to have her protected disclosures about the dangerous alcoholic culture of a federal wildlife refuge herd that she has no remedy for retaliation for making these disclosures because she chose to entrust these important claims to a U.S. district court. It's no small thing that in our last oral argument before the Ninth Circuit that the judge sitting there, sua sponte, suggested that this is a case that meets the requirements of equitable tolling.
Well, let's leave equitable tolling aside for a minute because that tends to be a controversial issue depending on the context at which it arises. So if we are sympathetic to what you are saying, what's the alternative to an analysis under equitable holding? Is there just an abuse of discretion by the board not saying that she showed adequate cause for the delay?
Correct. You could simply choose to go under the good cause for the delay standard, which the MSPB to be looking at particular circumstances of the case below.
So give us a couple of those most egregious errors.
Okay. One, the MSPB judge ignored that the jurisdiction over these mixed cases has been in a state of confusion at all times during the proceedings. The state of confusion would be relevant to the appellant's mind.
Is there still a state of confusion in your view, or is it sorted out since then?
I believe there's still a state of confusion. While the Supreme Court in Perry has recognized that there's still this state of confusion in 2017, there's still a conflict in the circuits. The Ninth Circuit says district court doesn't have jurisdiction over
As to whether you have to exhaust as to a WPA claim.
Yes.
So Your theory is that she had a reasonable basis for filing in the district court as opposed to going to the MSPB, and that under those circumstances there's good cause for the delay. That's basically it, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And that she was, and the Ninth Circuit agreed with us that the appellant had a reasonable basis to rely on the Tenth Circuit decision and Wells.
In fact, the Tenth Circuit decision is right on point because it also involved WPA in combination with discrimination claims, whereas Sloan, the Ninth Circuit, involved civil service procedural violations and discrimination. Now, while I understand the Ninth Circuit decided to follow Sloan in your case, you had a regional circuit case directly on all fours with yours in favor of you. You had the Ninth Circuit case, which was different factually, but maybe spelled potential doom for your client. But it didn't seem to me the Ninth Circuit case foreclosed it under the circumstances. I don't think their decision to follow it in Kerr is unreasonable, but I'm struggling with how you did anything wrong by believing that given the fact of the Tenth Circuit decision and the Sloan case being different on the facts, that you couldn't still pursue this avenue direct through the Ninth Circuit.
That's a friendly question, by the way.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I would also volunteer that in the Sloan matter, the Ninth Circuit did not say, though they've extended it now, they did not say at the time that you had to, that you could not go to the district court. It just said you couldn't take your claims to the EEO. So it was the MSPB decision below where she added in the language like, oh, and the appellant should have known they couldn't take these or to the district court.
Sloan is the dictum, and Sloan is almost clearly wrong, right? Because Kerr says we're going to require exhaustion in this special area of WPA claims. There's no suggestion in Kerr that other claims coupled with a discrimination claim wouldn't go to the district court, which was the suggestion in Sloan. It's almost as though Kerr itself doesn't agree with the broad dictum in Sloan.
It's definitely still a morass, I think. That's
yeah, but we, what would, I mean, we couldn't, could we? You tell me, are we allowed in this case to hold that the Ninth Circuit got it wrong in Kerr? Well, then what would happen to poor Ms. Kerr? I mean, you know, we'd be sending her back to the Ninth Circuit after the Ninth Circuit held no? I mean, what would, I don't know, what would happen under those circumstances?
Well, I think you do have the option to say that there was good cause to delay the, okay, her filing, and that the MSPB should process her claim.
Another,
I don't think you have the authority to tell the Ninth Circuit.
The discrimination claims are gone now anyway, so we have jurisdiction.
That's true. I'm sorry.
I have another problem with the good cause for delay. This, you know, the MSPB AJ cites the 8.5 years of delay and talks about how significant it is. But what she overlooks, she or he, is it she or he?
She.
What she overlooks is that for over 5 of those years, the government agreed that jurisdiction was proper, allowed this case to go through multiple phases, allowed it to be decided by the district court, allowed it to go to the regional circuit. All those decisions were favorable to Ms. Kerr. And then when it goes back to the district court for the first time 5 years into the decision, after everybody spent a lot of time and money, including the court, working through these issues, the government says, ah, yes, we've now realized that you don't have jurisdiction. Now, of course, people can realize late you don't have jurisdiction, and I get that. But I don't see how the 8.5 years under those circumstances should count against Ms. Kerr.
Yeah, that was our take on it as well, is that her conduct could not be the only one responsible for the delay, when in fact we had 2 separate Ninth Circuit appeals, and, you know,
and obviously the government believed jurisdiction was proper too, because if the government attorney stands up and says, no, we never did, he or she is really going to be in a lot of trouble, right? Because why didn't they bring it up for 5 years?
And Ms. Kerr was definitely not on notice that there was any problem, because the Ninth Circuit exercised jurisdiction over her WPA claims and said, in fact, she had made protective disclosures under the WPA, remanded it back to the district court for us to have a trial on both her discrimination and her WPA claim.
So do you think we missed anything, or you want to give the other guy a shot?
Well, I'm a little concerned as well with the equitable tolling issue, because the MSPB, without citing any case law, legal precedent, said, I'm not going to extend equitable tolling to an adverse action.
Now, see, my problem with your equitable tolling argument is that the statute affords for an express exclusion from timeliness for good cause. It's hard for me to imagine that the court should have the option of doubling down with yet another exclusion for equitable reasons.
Okay.
So that's where I am on equitable
tolling. The government agrees that the cause exception is broader than equitable tolling anyway.
So if you win in a good cause, you don't need to worry about equitable tolling.
Okay, why don't we hear from the government?
Okay, thank you.
We'll reserve the time for rebuttal if you need it.
May it please the court. There's actually 2 reasons why this court should affirm the MSPB. The first reason is under this court's precedent. There is no, once an election is made, there's no circling back to the MSPB. So presented with an election between district court and the MSPB, the petitioner chose district court and was limited to the remedies available in district court, whatever they may be. This court doesn't need to weigh in on the circuit split between the Ninth Circuit and the Tenth Circuit. Whatever the remedies were, those were available to her in the district court, and that's where she went.
Well, what would you have had her do? Because It seems pretty clear to me that at the time she filed in the district court, you had this Tenth Circuit decision, and you have the language of the statute, which seems to say that all the issues go to the district court. How is she supposed to do this? There's a lack of clarity as to where she's supposed to go. She chose one place and made a reasonable decision about that. And how is she supposed to solve this problem? Go to both places at once?
No, absolutely not. Congress gave a choice. Several places in the procedures, Congress has given complainants the choice, the election to make.
Well, what if she made a choice. What if it was a reasonable choice, and it turned out that the Ninth Circuit didn't agree, though other circuits might have come out differently? Does that not provide a basis for good cause?
Well, that's my point. There's actually 2 reasons here why the court should affirm. The first one is, once this election of district court was made, the MSPB was deprived of jurisdiction under the law of this circuit.
So what?
Means that she could not come back to the MSPB.
Well, so what? I mean, you know.
So there's no.
How can it not be good cause to make a reasonable choice to go to the district court?
So these are 2 separate reasons. One is MSPB jurisdiction. One is timeliness. If the MSPB doesn't have jurisdiction, there's no timeliness question. So if she elects district court and that's her election and it's binding and she can't come back the MSPB because under this case, this court's case law, she can't come back under Connor. In fact, in Connor, this case was presented with, this court was presented with an MSPB decision dismissing as untimely. The court said, that's wrong. MSPB's wrong. This should not have been dismissed as untimely. Should have been dismissed because the MSPB was deprived of jurisdiction when the petitioner elected to go to district court. And with that election at district court, not just an election of a form, it's an election of remedies. So whatever remedies are available in district court, that is what was chosen. Now, if there's some exception to Connor, and I found none, then yes, I believe the MSPB should be affirmed on the
I don't understand. It wasn't, she didn't knowingly, an election seems to presume that people know what their rights are if they make certain decisions. And you would agree, would you not, that there was at a minimum ambiguity that she, as to whether or not she would lose her WPA claim if she chose the district court route, right?
Well, yes and no. She was given a notice of her choices between MSPB and district court.
And if she guessed wrong, you say she's out of luck.
That seems to be always be the case, that especially if she was fortunate enough to have counsel at the time, she's had counsel throughout, that you know, she'd have to examine what claims can I take to the MSPB, what claims can I take to district court. There were claims she could not take to the MSPB, so she chose to go to district court.
So you lose your WPA claims if you choose to pursue your EEO claims in district court under the statute?
Yes, because she is, by going to district court, she is challenging the discrimination decision that she was given by the agency by going through the agency EEO process. If she wanted to challenge her civil service claims, her non-discrimination claims, including this whistleblower, her whistleblower claim, then she should have chosen the MSPB and received, once she received the final decision from the MSPB on both the discrimination and non-discrimination claims, then she could have gone to district court.
So are you saying she couldn't everything. Have presented her claims to the MSPB, but she could have gone to the Office of Special Counsel for the whistleblower claims, right? Even though you say it expressly in your brief that, so
right.
I'm not making it up.
No,
this is your claim.
I would say this. It's possible that
that's not what you said in your brief. On page 24, let's look at your brief.
Right.
On your brief on page 24, you say she couldn't have gone to the MSPB. Ms. Kerr could still present her whistleblower claim to the Office of Special Counsel under 5 U.S.C. 1214, and if it remained unresolved after doing so, could file an IRA appeal with the MSPB. Now you're trying to back away from that statement.
No. It's possible she could go to the OSC and ask them to investigate. I'm not saying that it's likely that she would have success there. I'm not saying it's likely she would have success at the board, but full disclosure, the OSC exists. She hasn't been there. She could try it.
Wait, are you saying that because that's a prerequisite to the MSPB doing it, or are you saying because I don't understand. In some cases, you know, are you saying that she needed, the reason the MSPB couldn't assert jurisdiction was because she needed have preceded that by going to the Office of Special Counsel?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay, so
what you're
saying
is that she had to bring all her claims, discrimination and non-discrimination claims, to the MSPB because the district court did not have jurisdiction over her non-discrimination claims?
If she wanted all of them heard in one forum, that's what she needed to do.
Well, what if she wanted, if she was okay in hearing them in two forums?
Well, these claims cannot be bifurcated, so that's not an option. She can't go to district court and the MSPB.
So she had, your theory is that even though Congress explicitly said that district courts have jurisdiction over mixed cases, Congress really didn't understand. In fact, she had to go to the MSPB if she wanted all her claims to be decided.
Well, it's not my theory, Your Honor. It's both the statute and
this
case.
The statute doesn't say that. The statute says if there's a decision, she can take it to all issues to the district court. And to the extent that Kerr said otherwise, it's probably wrong. But we don't have, that's not for us to decide. But you can't be saying that she has to go to the MSPB because she's got a mixed case. Congress said you can take mixed cases to the district court.
Well, what Connor says is she had a choice. She could choose district court or the MSPB, not both.
Well, you're saying she didn't have a choice. She had to go to the MSPB.
She did. She had a choice, and she chose district court.
So if you choose district court with respect to the EEO complaints, you're forfeiting your right to deal with the WPA claim.
In the Ninth Circuit, under Ninth Circuit case.
And
law,
if you
correct.
Choose MSPB, you're forfeiting your right to deal with the discrimination claims.
Certain discrimination claims that are related to the adverse action can be brought, but not the ones that are not related.
In this case.
Right.
So how, damned if she does, damned if she doesn't.
Well, what I was saying before, just to be very clear, that so there's these discrimination claims not related to the adverse action that were raised by petitioner. Basically, she checked all the boxes. Those claims would not have been decided by the MSPB. But she did exhaust those claims administratively before her own agency, in her own agency's EEO process. So once she got to district court after going the MSPB route, yes, then she could raise everything. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying she had to go to the MSPB. It was her choice. Congress gave her that choice.
Wait, I don't understand. So you say she could have done this by going first to the MSPB. For what purpose? To adjudicate the WPA claim, and then she moves over to district court to do a EEO complaint?
So
I'm really not understanding.
Okay.
And maybe
here's the choice. What makes case law complicated is Congress gave complainants elections at various points. The first election was, is she going to go to her agency EEO process, or is she going to go directly to the MSPB? But the next election was, she went to the agency eventually, got a final agency decision. The next choice is she going to go to district court and challenge the agency's final agency decision on discrimination? Or will she go to the MSPB? And that's a significant choice because the district court and the MSPB do not have matching jurisdiction. I think that's clear. So she had to make a choice based on what was best for her. She chose district court.
And Congress deliberately said that you can bring all your claims to district court. How do you read the language of the statute as depriving people in her position of the right to go to district court?
Well, I disagree that Congress said that you can bring a whistleblower protection.
Well, they didn't say that explicitly, but they just said the decision that she gets from the agency in a mixed case can go to district court.
The decision she got from the agency said that whistleblower claims are outside the EEO process and we don't have jurisdiction to address it. That's what the final agency decision said. And that was the decision she brought, she was challenging in district court. If she wanted a decision on the whistleblower claim, yes, she'd have to go to the MSPB because there's no law, no regulation that gives a district court de novo review over whistleblower claims.
I understand your counterpoint. I'd like to move you, if you don't mind, to the good cause. Because you could tell we have a lot of problems with that based on the questioning before. So would you like to address that?
Okay, so the timeliness assumes that you can circle back to the MSPB.
I understood your point about that. Now let's just go to whether there was or was not good cause.
Given that you can circle back, you know, that scenario, this court has said in a case called Bakashua that it's not good cause that you were pursuing other remedies in another form. And here she was given plain notice of MSPB time limits in the final agency decision. And in 2008, she chose to go to district court. So that's how long the time has been running. It's
notwithstanding that the government never said anything about that while the district court was proceeding.
Right? Well, for one thing, it's not for the government to advise her on which forum to go to. It was her choice. Congress gave her that choice.
Okay, but
doesn't the government, they were party to the case, right? Shouldn't they have said, no, we can't be here with respect to the WPA case?
Both parties are responsible for making sure that the forum they're in has jurisdiction. The government did raise it late, but they were entitled to raise
years
it at any
late.
Time.
Yes, 5 years late. And then the 5 years, which contributed as part, so the government was partially responsible for a portion of the 8.5-year delay because they likewise, for 5 of the 8.5 years, acquiesced in the idea that the federal court system had jurisdiction.
So even if we discount that, we still have
but the AJ
years
didn't.
That have
and it's
gone
a, but the AJ didn't. She looked at 8.5 years and made a big deal of how long that was.
Well, it's still years, no matter how you calculate it. It's years from the district court telling Ms. Kerr that we don't have jurisdiction.
But doesn't it also go to the reasonableness of her belief that it did have jurisdiction? Because even the government acquiesced in jurisdiction in that forum for 5 years. So doesn't that sort of tend to support the idea, her claim, that it was reasonable for her to think that that jurisdiction that jurisdiction was proper in that forum. The government thought so, too, for 5 years. So doesn't that all kind of weave together? And the AJ mentioned none of that.
Even if we go from the date that the government filed its motion to dismiss, or we ignore that, we go to the date the district court advised her it didn't have jurisdiction, or if we ignore that, we go by the date the Ninth Circuit advised her it didn't have jurisdiction, it's still late.
Yeah, but that's not for good cause. You don't want us to be deciding good cause in the first instance,
right?
I mean,
you cite the AJ who talked about not just the delay, but the in light of the excessive length of the delay, she has not demonstrated that she acted with due diligence. That sounds to me like the judge was considering the entire time frame.
As she should.
We can't read. If that wasn't right, if that analysis is patently wrong, I just don't feel like I ought to be in the first instance reweighing a question of good cause.
I mean, well, I think it's multi-factored.
I know. Do you want me to weigh all the multi-factors in the first instance?
Well, put it this way. If she was reasonable in filing in the district court both her discrimination claims and the WPA claims, and she was wrong about that, is that not good cause?
Whenever she learned about it, then it would. If she had come back immediately, it would be a different case.
Okay, so
when would immediately have been? The government mentioned it?
When she learned about it, which we could go from.
No, wouldn't it be after the Ninth Circuit's ruling?
We could go from the motion to dismiss by the government if that's considered definitive, or if it's not definitive because she challenged it, then the district court's ruling.
No, well, what about the Ninth Circuit?
Where the Ninth Circuit's ruling.
How long was it between the Ninth Circuit's ruling and her filing at the MSPB?
The Ninth Circuit decision was September 6, 2016. She appealed to the MSPB April 11, 2017.
Did she file for cert?
About 6 or 7.
What was the amount of time between the denial of cert and the filing of the MSPB?
Cert was denied March 20th. If we went by the denial of cert, she would be timely.
Okay.
But this court has said that pursuing other remedies isn't good cause. So that's
She wasn't pursuing other remedies. She was pursuing this remedy, and she thought that she had a right to have that forum adjudicated.
Well, there's no
that's
confusion.
That's not pursuing different remedies. That's not a let me take my claims in series. I'll put these here, and I'll go with those first, and I'll hold off on these until later. She tried to have them all adjudicated at the same place. Can I ask you one more question, because your time's about to run out? On page 10 of your brief, one of the things that you refer to, I'll wait till you get to page 10.
Okay.
At the very bottom, the last full sentence, you say the administrative judge stated that the FAD provided explicit notice that the agency, the EEO office, lacked jurisdiction over her whistleblower claims, and it provided notice of her MSPB appeal rights. And you point to appendix page 7 and 8. You don't have to turn to appendix page 7 and 8. Your characterization is pretty close to accurate, pretty much accurate. The characterization being, the administrative judge said, not only was her going to the Ninth Circuit unreasonable, but she had been on clear notice based on her FAD of what the proper forum was. Here's my problem. I'd like to ask you now to turn to the FAD with me, because I don't think it gives her any notice at all. Any clear notice of where she ought to go. So I will tell you, I think it's a clear error by the AJ or lack of substantial evidence. I agree with your characterization, that's what the AJ found, but the FAD is on, I believe, page, is it 52?
Right, I think the part you're talking about is like 72?
72, right, there it is. Appeal rights to the MSPB. Okay, so where does it explain that the EEO office, because it says the FAD provided explicit notice that the EEO office lacked jurisdiction and provided notice of her MSPB appeal rights. I assume from that statement and from the AJ's claim, you mean that that's the proper forum for her to be bringing it in.
Okay, so there's a notice of appeal rights at the end here, which complies with the EEOC regulation for notice of appeal rights.
That's unless I'm mistaken, that's just you can appeal this decision to the MSPB. That's not your claim should properly have been filed in the MSPB. Am I wrong about that?
No, the Notice of Appeal Rights simply sets out the choice, her choice.
It doesn't tell you that you have to go to the MSPB as opposed to the district.
She did not have to go to the MSPB.
Well.
If you want to pursue the whistleblower.
Well, I mean, that would be customizing the Notice of Appeal Rights to her various claims. It would, I mean, would it also say, look, you have some claims here that can't be brought to the MSPB? That would be very close to giving her advice on what she should do.
Do you remember the Supreme Court oral argument in the Perry case?
I do.
And how confused they were, legitimately confused by this whole mess of a system? Right. Do you remember how they struggle with what on earth is going on here with these procedural quagmire?
Right. Well, I would just say to that, there's no confusion about the MSPB time limits because they're right here in the decision. Okay, the final agency decision, page 72, it sets out the time limits for filing the MSPB, so there's never any confusion about that.
So the Connor case involved pursuing related claims but not the same claim in another forum?
I'm confused by that.
What did the Connor case involve? I don't have the Connor case here. What you say that the Connor case, that you make an election, you're stuck with your election. What were the claims? What was the facts of Connor?
Facts of Connor was, I believe she was removed and already had a case in district court on other discrimination claims and amended her complaint to include the termination as one of the claims,
right.
And then after that amendment of the complaint, then filed an appeal at the MSPB, which the MSPB dismisses on time.
On the discrimination claims.
And this court said this should not have been dismissed as untimely. It should have been dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. And this court has cited Connor many times. We also cite Williams.
But that was a case in which her filing and raising the termination claim in the district court was proper, right? There wasn't any question about the propriety of it.
Well, the district court had the same jurisdiction then that it has now.
Well, but you say it doesn't have the jurisdiction over the WPA claim. That's the problem.
Well,
so Connor's
I'm
a
not
situation.
Saying that the Ninth Circuit
says she got, if she... She made an election of remedies by going to the district court in Connor, but she could have gotten her claim adjudicated in Connor in the district court. That is not true here, right?
I don't know if she had a non-discrimination claim that could not have been. I think she made the argument that she had non-discrimination claims. If not,
no, but she. But your theory is the district court wasn't a proper forum. That's not the situation in Connor. The district court was a proper forum.
I want to be clear. My theory is not that the district court was not the proper forum.
I understand. I'm saying Connor's different because in Connor, when you filed in the district court, you could get relief, correct?
On discrimination claims, yes.
Yeah.
But the district court only has the jurisdiction that it has. So...
Well, when you keep saying it's not my position, it was the Ninth Circuit's ruling, didn't the government make that argument to the Ninth Circuit? Wasn't it, in fact, the government's position that the Ninth Circuit adopted?
I believe it was based on Ninth Circuit law, existing
no,
Ninth Circuit law.
No, that's not my question. Didn't the government argue no jurisdiction in that case on that very basis? So are you not the government? When you say it's not my position, are you meaning to tell me you personally disagree with what the government argued in Kerr?
No. I'm not. But I don't think this court even needs to get into...
But what did you mean by that when you kept... When you repeatedly, in response to Judge Dyke, said, that's not my position. That's the Ninth Circuit's position.
It's not that it's not my position. I think what Judge Dyke said is that I'm saying she should have gone to the MSPB. I'm not saying that. It was her choice. Congress has made clear the choice is with the complainant. And the it's not
just
an
election of forms. The government's view is that Kerr is correctly decided.
Again, I don't think this court needs to reach that, but that is what the government argued in Kerr, yes.
Can I go back to...
I don't think this court even needs to reach that because you have Connor, which actually is directly on point.
But it's not directly on point because in Connor she could get relief in the district court, whereas here she couldn't.
I believe it's either in Connor or one of the... Or Williams.
But Williams is a non-precedential case. That's not relevant. It's not binding.
Well, if you make an election of a forum, you're also making an election of a remedy. Okay, and your election of a remedy is based on what you can, what's available. So if she had elected
the MSPB, that's the point. That's exactly the point. What's available, and under the government's theory, it wasn't an available forum because she couldn't properly file there. So it's different from Connor.
It was her choice to go there, and she did. I don't know that that's a government argument that she had to go to the MSPB.
Can I take you back to the point Judge Moore made early on, seems like hours ago in this discussion, which is that your footnote that says she can still present her whistleblower claim to the Office of Special Counsel. I don't have 1214 in front of me. Are there no time limits in the Office of Special Counsel
a whistleblower claim? That's exactly why I put the footnote in, because there is no time limit to go to the Office of Special Counsel. I will say this, though.
But I thought your argument was not just the timeliness, but sort of like you can't have jurisdiction over it. The MSPB can't adjudicate this claim now.
As things stand now, the MSPB can adjudicate it.
Cannot. But if this same case were to come up through the Office of Special Counsel, it would. That would obviate all of the other problems with this.
That would, then the board would have jurisdiction, but I don't know, I'm not commenting on likelihood of success, but yes,
sure.
That's why the footnote's in there. That's exactly why it's in there, because there's no finding on the special counsel, and if she can persuade them to investigate, then that's a potential avenue.
Does she have to, I mean, there are some instances in which the complainant can't go to the MSPB without having previously gone to the Office of Special Counsel. Is that the circumstance here? Would the MSPB say, no, you got to go back to the special counsel? So
there's two ways the MSPB can hear a whistleblower claim. One is it's combined with an adverse action, a removal. Or if it's not an adverse action, then the complainant has to go to OSC first and exhaust there.
Okay, and this one is tied to a...
This one was tied to her constructive discharge.
Okay, thank you. You've got some time on rebuttal if you need it.
Okay. Well, I'm hoping you'll address Connor.
Okay. Well, and reviewing that, I didn't bring it up in my kind of initial presentation because it seems completely irrelevant to me. My understanding of the facts on Connor is that he alleged he had an EEO complaint internally. He had an external EEO complaint in district court, and then he just added the removal to his internal EEO complaint, and they said you're litigating the same case in the district court as you are in the administrative process, and that's what's not allowed. So it wasn't that
so you can't be in two places at once.
Yeah, it was the exact same case, and that's specifically...
Can I ask you about the Office of Special Counsel?
Right.
You could have saved yourself a year on the appeal. Is it your view? What would she lose if it was? Is it because it's tied to her adverse action?
We'll be back here in a year or two when the agency argues latches, because it's absolutely, they're able to argue that we should have presented this back at the time using the equitable defense of latches. We faced it before in the OSC. There are no time limits for filing a complaint in the OSC, but the OSC will say, oh, why didn't you raise this back then? And we'll be back in the exact same consideration and not any further along in the processing of this case. And then finally, you brought up the point of the FAD, which I did want to talk about. Council says that, they listed out all these MSPB deadlines, and then at the very end of the FAD at page 73, it specifically says, in lieu of an appeal to the board, the appellant may file a civil action in an appropriate United States district court within 30 calendar days of receipt of the...
I know. I'm like thinking, how can the AJ find that this that FAD clearly lets her know where she has to go and on what?
Okay.
It was a form. I mean, and it mentioned both. And yeah, that was very confusing to me. That seemed anything but crystal clear.
Okay. And when the agency ran with it and said that meant that it's that she had to present... had to file a civil suit on her discrimination claims, but it wasn't.
Nothing about those statements break out the claims and say, these go here, these go here, nothing.
Okay. I don't have anything further.
Thank you. We thank both sides. We appreciate your patience with us and your effort to make a case, notwithstanding some harsh words. Thank you.